shall sack. Mother's comets, rocks, and NASDAQ. All is horseshit to make you sad. Dreadmedia.com.
I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock.
Never before so much paralyzing terror as in this hair-raising orgy of sadism.
Come out in the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Hello and welcome to episode 865 of Dread Media. I'm your host, Desmond Reddick, back with you for another great episode. I'll tell you what this episode's all about after I tell you that we are proud to be sponsored by you. And by you, I mean the patron Dreadites. Everybody who goes over to patreon.com/dreadmedia, that part two, patreon.com/dreadmedia, and supports the show for as little as a dollar a month, gets my undying gratitude and also a bunch of bonuses. So check it out, patreon.com/dreadmedia. All right. So, what are we doing this week? This week, well, we're paying tribute to Lucio Fulci again. If there's one director that Dread Media has covered more than any other, I would probably guess it's Lucio Fulci. Dread Media's love affair with Fulci began all the way back in episode 36. Now, actually, it began long before that. Of course, you know, seeing City of the Living Dead, The Beyond, and Zombie 2, like way back on VHS, you know, late 80s, early 90s, respectively. But, the first Dread Media episode covering Lucio Fulci's episode 36, that's May 5th of 2008, was episode 36 of Dread Media, where I covered 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I did 6 reviews. That's so funny. I didn't even plan this before that. I did, like, search Fulci on the archive page. Like, when was the first Fulci episode? Because I remembered correctly, it was one where I cover 6 Fulci movies. On that episode, I reviewed The Eroticist, Don't Torture a Duckling, The Psychic, Zombie 2, City of the Living Dead, and The Beyond. Zombie 2 or Zombie. Of course, I would again cover some of those films later in Dread Media's run, but I also would then go on to cover several other Fulci films, like New York Ripper, Door into Silence, Cat in the Brain, House by the Cemetery, Conquest, Manhattan Baby. and I even had Fabio Fritzi, episode 434 on, and that was during, what was that called? If I just look down here, it'll say eventually. Yellow Christmas, where I dedicated the December of 2015 to giallo films. We covered Don't Torture a Duckling and the first episode of that. But I also interviewed Fabio Fritzi, who's probably best known for doing scores for films by Lucio Fulci. 4 of the Apocalypse, way back. That one was way back. Holy shit. 4 of the Apocalypse is actually the first Fulci movie I reviewed on this podcast. That's back in episode 13. an impactful episode of Dread Media for various reasons. One I'm not going to mention, simply because it might make a great trivia question someday. But episode 13 was a fucking fantastic episode. This was November of 2007, by the way. So the entire month of November 2007 was dedicated to interviews. Interviews of authors. So the lineup of November 2007, I'm just going to run through it. Fuck it, why not? Greg Lamberson, I think that was, yeah, that was the first time I talked to Greg Lamberson. And the first time I talked to Keith Latch. I mean, it's going to be the first time I talk to most of these people. So maybe I should stop saying it. And that was episode 10. Episode 11 was Jack Ketchum and Steve Vernon. Crazy. Episode 12, goddamn, well, RIP Jack Ketchum. Episode 12 was F. Paul Wilson and Mark Justice, RIP Mark Justice. I'm really pulling for F. Paul Wilson in his recovery. And then episode 13, his own self, Joe R. Lansdale and James Newman. In that episode, you know, we ended up talking a lot about Weird Western in that episode. And then I review Four of the Apocalypse in that one. So that was episode 13. Crazy. Crazy. Anyway, that's Dread Media's history with Lucio Fulci. And I also, I think it's kind of funny now that I hadn't realized it. I'm finally getting back to that point I was trying to make, about 5 minutes ago. This episode is also going to be an episode where we cover six Lucio Fulci films. It just so happened to be that way. So first up, Tom and I are discussing A Lizard in a Woman's Skin. And I sort of, okay. Yeah, I was like, you know, I've done these giallo / Italian horror / even like Italian horror films not directed by Fulci or Argento or something, or Bava. Yeah, did a whole Bava episode. But yeah, I was like, what am I going to do for the top five? And then I realized I had five brand new Blu-rays that are, you know, remasters of Lucio Fulci films, that I have yet to watch. So over the past week, I've watched, five Lucio Fulci films. And I guess I'm just going to do the Dread Media top five chronologically. Start with the oldest and get up to the newest. I thought about doing it by rating, but even on something as cool as Letterboxd, it's not easy. I'll probably make a mistake. There's a bunch of ties as well, you know. But it's going to be a fun one because I'm going to do like capsule reviews of five films. So we're going to get to that. But actually, I'll do a capsule review of a sixth film that has to do with Fulci. Severin had a big Fulci had a big Fulci month. I bought the whole Fulci package. And that was the Blu-ray of Enigma and the Blu-ray of Demonia, two films we're going to talk about this week, as well as a t-shirt on each of those films, as well as this pseudo-documentary. I'm not sure what you'd even call it. Did I just hit the microphone? I just hit the microphone. Fulci for Fake, which is a film by Simone Scafidi, but it's about Lucio Fulci. I'll just start talking about that now. Fuck it. This intro is already almost 10 minutes. Let's blow it out. Fulci for Fake, this documentary, it pulls from the title of one of my very favorite films, the pseudo-documentary by Orson Welles, F for Fake. So the back of the Blu-ray here disc says that it's a docudrama. And what it is an actor says he's preparing for a role to play Fulci in this movie, even though he like barely does it. But that's like the setup for him interviewing the people that knew Fulci. And so this guy gets done up in full Lucio Fulci makeup, and he walks around locations and stuff trying to look like Fulci did. I don't know. I wouldn't even say it's unsettling. I think it's just kind of stupid, honestly. I think that, yeah, I don't like the docudrama thing. Like, if you're going to be a talking head, like, if you're going to go out and film places, do it with a purpose. Tell me why you're filming those places, not just as a backdrop for, you know, your Lucio Fulci lookalike to stand looking like Lucio Fulci. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. However, what I will give this movie is that it does have a great selection of interviews. You know, I would say that most of these people have been pretty well interviewed about Lucio Fulci in the past, almost just based on the Blu-ray features I've seen, you know? But specifically, we get an interview with Fulci's youngest daughter. I can't remember her name. That was really fascinating. All I'd ever heard about her is that when she was a child, she was thrown from a horse and broke her back on a fence or something. And that really did affect him as a person, obviously, right? But it was very interesting to hear her story, because as far as I know, she's never really been interviewed on any of these documentaries. You know, there's Paura. I would say Paura's a better documentary, but they fucking interview everybody. That's like the ultimate talking head documentary. It's Lucio Fulci Remembered. It's Paura. Lucio Fulci remembered, and Paura's Fear in Italian, right? And that one is just like, boom, talking head interview, boom, talking head interview, boom, talking head interview. And I respect that more, I think. But Fulci for Fake is still like a 3 out of 5. A lot of great remembrances, and a lot of really good small stories. It's more of perhaps a more intimate, you know, it interviews both of his daughters, for example. But you know, I've seen Antonella interviewed before. I mean, I'm Facebook friends with Antonella Fulci. Hi, Antonella. I don't know if you listen. Fulci, and you know, she's always compelling. She always, you know, tells the straight shit. And does so in this documentary. So it's good in that aspect. I just think the whole docudrama aspect, the whole like getting the guy made up to look like Fulci, it just fails. Like, I get what they were going for, but they never, you know, it's not even something like casting JonBenet, you know, which I thought was an excellent documentary. It may have been on in my top 10 of that year. I thought it was fantastic. But, yeah, it just doesn't, you know, for a documentary about such a controversial filmmaker, it doesn't push any boundaries in that way. So, you know, it's just sort of used as interstitial to have the filmmaker talk over top, you know, or the actor. I don't know. Are they the same guy? I don't even know. Anyway, Fulci for Fake. I think you can find it on Tubi. A lot of Severin's releases are on Tubi. Or, hey, if you want my copy, let me know. Anyway, that's Fulci for Fake. Still 3 out of 5. Simone Scafidi. Great interviews of Fulci. Just a little overblown with the dramatic aspect, which never really seems to be dramatic. They don't, like, really relive many things with the actor. Just a lot of walking around talking. that kind of thing. Anyway, so there we go. That's Fulci for Fake. This is probably officially the longest intro in Dread Media history. If somebody's keeping track, let me know. Anyway, let's get into this episode, even though it feels like it's been an entire episode. Let's get into this episode with a song from the score for A Lizard in a Woman's Skin, which is a film that I'm reviewing very shortly with Tom DJ. If I haven't said that, I said that fucking 15 minutes ago. I forgot about it already. Yeah, I did say it. Okay, so Tom and I are talking about A Lizard in a Woman's Skin. Let's listen to a track from the score of A Lizard in a Woman's Skin from the great, the legendary Ennio Morricone. This track is called Fondata Power. Fondate? Established, based, yeah, founded, okay, justified, okay, power, fear, justified fear, interesting, okay, cool. Anyway, that's well-established fear coming up. Ennio Morricone. Take two.
Okay,
shit.
That's, you know how in one of the tropes of the giallo is that we see the same image over and over and over again, like from different angles?
Oh, no. Do I have to start looking over my back for somebody with black leather gloves at this point?
No, I'm saying...
Am I in a giallo movie?
That the fact that we're recording this for the second time is like that.
Yeah. It's like I just woke up and now am experiencing exactly what I experienced yesterday. That's what's happening right now.
I remember it's good that we were recording, because I have a question about the fucking giant geese.
Oh yeah, right. Okay. Well, let's talk about what movie this actually is that we're talking about this week. We're talking about the Italian legend Lucio Fulci's 1971 freak out psychedelic giallo, A Lizard in a Woman's Skin, featuring Florinda Balkan, Stanley Baker, and Jean Sorel.
And has the celebrity victim, Anita Strindberg.
Yeah, right.
And
celebrity victim. I like that.
What else is she?
Yeah, exactly. No, I just like it. It's funny.
Okay. So this was a film when I was young, okay. And my mom and I would go to pick up my father from his moonlighting job at City Line Cab Service. Mm-hmm. There was a movie theater next door called the City Line Cinemas.
Yeah,
and they showed the grungiest of grungy shit.
Perfect.
And they played A Woman in a Lizard Skin. They had the American poster. It was a half and half of a woman and a lizard. And it freaked 8-year-old Tom the fuck out.
Is it an accurate portrayal of the film?
Well, there is no lizard.
No.
Although there is a giant fuck off goose for some reason.
Yeah, there is a giant goose. There is a giant goose.
And there are hippies.
This is already a better review than last time, because we got that story in it. And we didn't even talk about lizards last time, even though it's literally the second word or the first word in the title. Sometimes right. This is referred to as Lizard in a Woman's Skin. Other times, A Lizard in a Woman's Skin.
Right.
Original title, Una Lucertoia con la Pel di Donna. Yeah. Or something like that. Should I do it again? Should I synopsize
it again?
Do it again.
Okay. Do the synopsis again.
So in this one, Florinda Balkan, she the witch from Don't Torture a Duckling, or witch with air quotes, from Don't Torture a Duckling, is back, and she plays the daughter of a British politician, and she dresses like a pulp hero most of the time. and just fucking absolutely love her look. She just has like a collection of, mm-hmm. of like complete body length jackets that button all the way up and, mm-hmm. and jaunty fedoras. She's got like a light gray one, a dark gray one, a brown one. Man, she's awesome. Anyway.
She's looking for a 1950s film noir to step into.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. She's looking for some fog to step out of, you know?
Yes.
So she is living in this apartment and sort of has a dream about her neighbor, you know, her sort of lusty neighbor being killed. And she has...
played by celebrity murder victim Anita Strindberg.
Yeah. And she sees like the POV killing in her dream. Like it's, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, like it's the view of the person who's doing it. And so she's freaking out and trying to figure out who killed her neighbor. when it seems pretty obvious, but
yes.
There's crazy fucking hippies that are involved. There's her, you know, completely continuously confused husband.
Yeah,
yes. Husband. Yes. Yeah, played by Jean Sorel.
And her daughter.
Right. Yeah.
And their and the husband's live-in secretary, because we see her in her house once, and that's because she's getting naked with the husband.
Right, right.
every time we see her, and she has like that freaky psychedelic, you know, yellow submarine motherfucking, you know, motor car.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a psychedelic movie. There's lots of freakouts, and Fulci does it really well. It's, you know, it's everything you want in a psychedelic freakout in 1971 on film. It just looks awesome. There's, like, literally, like, terrifying imagery, shocking imagery, and Florinda Balkan carries this movie. Mm-hmm. And it demands a lot from her, I think.
And there is a scene in this film that so upset the Italian censors.
Right.
That they took Lucio Fulci to court and almost had to spend 2 years in prison. If it wasn't for Carlo Rambaldi showing up at the courthouse with the dog puppets to prove that he didn't kill any dogs.
The Italians take movie violence extremely seriously. Extremely seriously, which is actually surprising given how violent many of their movies are. There's a shocking scene with dogs in this one. It is, of course, fake. I shouldn't have to say, of course, because, you know, Cannibal Holocaust exists.
Right.
So
it is arguably the most upsetting scene in the film.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's fuck. You don't expect to see a special effect like that.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, boom, it's right in the middle of the screen. You're staring at it for, I don't know, 10 seconds. You know, mm-hmm. like that's a long time to hang on a special effect like that.
It's
the sound effects. Yeah. It also does look pretty real and is quite upsetting.
Yes. But, and of course we also have as our hero, Inspector Corwin, the most annoying detective inspector.
Yeah.
Scotland Yard has to offer. Not only is he a close talker, as you mentioned in the first attempt of this review.
Yeah.
He is a whistler.
There's nothing you love more than somebody that whistles all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for serenading us all the time.
Yeah. Look, we've got Ennio Morricone right over there.
yeah, totally.
Why don't we give
Ennio a flute. You don't need to whistle anything. How about that?
There you go.
shit.
The funny thing about this film is, and I mentioned this in the first thing, is that they're the whole subplot with these hippies. There are two of them, one with a heroic red afro.
Yeah. Well, they both have, like, big heads of red hair, right?
The guy's
kind of a red, like, he's more of, like, a bright redhead kind of thing, and she's much, like, darker red.
Oh, and I love the fact that she paints by just throwing knives at a canvas.
It's pretty cool.
she dips the knife in paint and throws the knife.
Throws it into a canvas, and then the paint just bleeds down the canvas. It's perfect.
And that
guy is so fucking creepy. So, I mean, they're both creepy, but she, it's like, yeah, she's kind of sexy too. But that guy is real creepy.
The thing is that there's, like, a good 20 minutes of this film that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
If the hippies don't decide, let's torment this woman.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there's this big, long, they find this abandoned cathedral, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he chases her through the cathedral with a knife.
Up onto the roof,
and then decides, you stay there.
Well, a sniper saves her.
Yeah, okay, but
where
still.
Did that guy come from?
I don't know.
There's literally a guy across the across the street with a rifle, and he, like, shoots, and he's like, if you don't put down that knife, I'm gonna kill you, or whatever. And the guy just turns around and runs away. But I don't think that guy was in the rest of the movie.
Oh,
I'm very confused by that. But holy shit, this movie's wild. It's fantastic.
You're asking for logic in a giallo?
Exactly. You're not supposed to have logic. You're supposed to be completely confounded by the mystery, or completely so convinced of the mystery's obviousness that it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, this one's the latter of that. Yeah. For sure. But it's also like, what the fuck is going on? It's crazy. It's a crazy psychedelic movie, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. You know, talking about it this second time makes me want to put it up a half a star.
Yeah, see, we're having more fun talking about
it. We're having more fun with it.
We've already mentioned Ennio Morricone. Yes. Just wanted to say he's the fucking legend. The legend, and I'm going to try and lead into this with some of the music from this, if I can find it. I just want to find it on vinyl, maybe responsible for
my absolute favorite music cue of all time, which is the chase scene music from Danger Diabolic.
Oh, okay, yeah. that whole score/soundtrack just fucking rules. Just rules. So swanky. And this one. Very, very jazzy, but also he has like some really scary horror movie music in this one too. It's cool.
I still am of the opinion that this is just like average giallo. It doesn't reach the hysterics of Sergio Martino's work or, of course, the Grandmaster Dario Argento.
Right. Well, as I mentioned before, I would put this up there with that. I'd rather watch this than Suspiria.
Well, Suspiria isn't a giallo, no matter what people will tell you.
That's true. But I'd rather watch this than Inferno for sure.
That's also not a giallo.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. Inferno, or are you thinking of opera?
Oh, I'm thinking of opera.
You're thinking of opera. Okay, that's a giallo.
Right. Inferno is like the witchy apartment building.
The witchy... I can't think of a better explanation. That's the whole plot.
Yeah.
Of Inferno.
Yeah.
Witchy apartment building.
deep red. I would put above this. It's in my opinion, like yeah. other than Blood and Black Lace, it's the definitive.
Deep red, and I would also put Bird with the Crystal Plumage up there as well.
That's a good one.
You know,
yeah, I would count this among the classic giallo for me.
Okay, but yeah. I originally gave this a 3, but we're having so much fun, I now want to give it a 3.5.
Yeah. I gave it a 4, and I want to go up to a 4.5. I'm gonna stick with 4.
And we didn't even get around to talking about your pal Florinda Balkan and how it seems to be a trope of giallo that they find these women who are not exactly beautiful, but you just can't take your eyes off them.
Yeah, they're striking. And like the camera just wants that face. You know what I mean? Like some people you look and you're just like, Jesus, you know, like it might not be because of how beautiful they are. Sometimes it is, but it's just like some faces the cameras love.
Yeah. I mean, her, everybody's favorite, and Edwina Fetich.
Edwidge Finnick, isn't it?
What you said. of course, my favorite, Marissa Mell.
Right.
But yeah, no, there's a definite type when it comes to giallo women.
Yeah, and I mentioned before Barbara Steele.
Yeah,
you know she still counts there, and also extremely striking.
Barbara Steele is. Elevated because she is basically the first modern scream queen.
Yeah. Yeah. And that face, I mean, I'm convinced her face just magically created like Panaglide or something because the camera doesn't want to move at all. It just follows her around, you know?
She's like Susie Sue.
Yeah.
You know, Susie and the Banshee, where it's like, you look at a picture of her and you can't help thinking she's staring back.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
She's like, you want more? You want to look? Okay, fine. Look.
Yeah. And Don't Torture a Duckling is one of my favorite horror movies. And Florinda Balkan is just a revelation in it. And I think she's fantastic in this one. Have we talked about her costuming in this review?
I think you brought it up here. But
okay.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Jesus.
With the long jackets and the...
And the jaunty hat. God damn. She looks fucking fantastic. Just fantastic.
She looks like she's ready to take out 2 45s at a minute.
Yeah, totally.
Some gangsters.
I want the statue of her in like the light gray version of that thing. Like, I just want that statue. It looks like such an image, you know, just such a striking image of someone standing there, you know? Just a great look. And then of course there's like the horrific imagery, the nightmare imagery, the dream imagery, and the hippies. This is a pretty wild ride.
So so check it out.
All right. We're going to throw to an experimental song. I've already told Tom all about this.
Yes.
So listeners, I apologize, but this isn't as abrasive as other tracks on this album. The album I'm referring to is called Adult Themes for Voice and was recorded by Mike Patton when he was on tour with Faith No More in his hotel room when he was trying to stay out of trouble, just mixing and creating compositions in that using just his voice. And then of course, since he owned a record label, he put it out himself. And, this is, you know, one of his legendary releases, Adult Themes for Voice. And, I almost called it a song. A track on Adult Themes for Voice is titled A Lizard with the Skin of Woman. By Mike Patton. Sorry.
Hiss, hiss.
All right, I have come back for another
Dread Media Top 5.
That's right, another Dread Media Top 5, as discussed at the top of the show. This Dread Media Top 5 is Dread Media Top 5 relatively recently released Blu-rays that Desmond had on his shelf that he needed an excuse to watch. They just all happened to be films by Lucio Fulci. And all but one of these is a first watch. And that is the first one on this list, which is even older than A Lizard in a Woman's Skin. And that is... Oh, okay. So I think... This is where things switch up a little bit. On Letterboxd, by the way, I'm Dread Media, all one word, capital D, capital M, if that matters. On Letterboxd, if you have a Letterboxd account, add me, because I don't know how to add you. You will be spoiled on some reviews, but my mind changes. I just changed my mind on one of these movies. Not changed my mind, but sort of like changed my rating. Just actually a couple of these right before I started recording. Anyway, on Letterboxd, this movie is called One on Top of the Other from 1969. I have it in the Mondo Macabro Blu-ray as Perversion Story. So, yeah, so Perversion Story is kind of sort of like a Hitchcockian kind of setup. It's very much that it's like this, this dude's wife dies and he gets the insurance payout, and then he's basically, you know, prime suspect, but he's also trying to solve the mystery of, the, you know, the, what, like go-go dance or like, I don't know, maybe stripper. Maybe, yeah, is a stripper? Yeah, maybe a stripper, who looks, you know, who's been hired at his club, who looks exactly like his wife, his dead wife. So yeah, interesting little weird out there. But you know what? It never really gets to the point. It's maybe the same thing I said about Fulci for Fake, but it's bloodless as well. And the script is just kind of dumb. If it were tightened up and swished around a little bit, it might be a little bit better. But it certainly is sexy. And it's not near as lurid as other Fulci films. We'll get there. And I think what really does save this from being a real downer is the bouncy, sort of jazzy score from Riz Ortolani, another famous Italian film composer there. Yeah, it's really sort of, you know, like swinging psychedelic 60s kind of stuff. Good stuff. One on Top of the Other, or Perversion Story. Makes it a real pain in the ass when these movies start changing their titles, hey? So, all the way from 1969's Perversion Story, we jump to 1984 for a movie called, well, the Blu-ray I have calls it Murder Rock. All one word, there's two R's, but there's two R's in murder, and then it's just awk at the end of murder. However, it's also referred to Murder-Rock Dancing Death. Yeah, this one, holy smokes. So, the plot of Murder Rock, I mean, it's just, it's this dance troupe. And, you know, it's like Flashdance meets Giallo, but... Now, I say that, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, we know what this movie is. But no, it's not that. You know, it's the tamest Fulci film I've ever seen, probably. The violence is so, like, banal and quiet. You know, like, there's no real gore. The way people are murdered in this movie is they're chloroformed. And then a hat pin is like poked into their boob, into their heart. So, I mean, you see a lot of bare boob, but like, it's still quite a tame film. And then they pull the hat pin out and there's like a little drop of blood. It's like the daintiest, the daintiest, Giallo film ever, and it's just, it's weird that way. It's very weird. It's got a ridiculous cheeseball coked out 80s score / soundtrack from Keith Emerson. Yes, that Keith Emerson from Emerson, Lake and Palmer. But yeah, this one to me, it's just ridiculous. This is, yeah, this is what I said in my Letterboxd review. The other end of the spectrum that ends with New York Ripper. As far as, like, Fulci films shot in New York that, yeah, that feature violence against women, I guess. Oh, it's almost like this is a film for teenagers, but it's not. Very weird. And by teenage, I mean like teenagers of the 80s. I don't think teenagers today can handle boobs in movies. I'm saying it. I'm saying it. Okay, because we're getting there. We're jumping forward to 1986. Going from one of Lucio Fulci's tamest films to surely his most lurid film, which before this day, I would have thought it was The Eroticist or New York Ripper. But man, in comparison, The Eroticist looks like an episode of Benny Hill compared to this thing. This thing is way more, by this thing I'm talking The Devil's Honey. And spoiler alert, it's the best movie of this top five. This movie is so filthy. Lots of depravity. Lots of stuff that you see. You don't actually see it, you know? But it's very softcore. Yeah, it's crazy. It's this woman who's like dating this guy who's like a really good saxophone player, but also a pervert. And, and when he is killed on the operating table, his girlfriend basically kidnaps the surgeon and tortures him. So yeah, there's that. So, this is like an outlier. I was shocked watching this. This does not feel like a Lucio Fulci film. Had I watched this blind, I would have guessed probably Jean Rollin first. Probably. And then maybe Tinto Brass. Though I would argue it's not quite as well shot as Tinto Brass's films. Let's face it. But yeah, it's like a super sexual thriller. Yeah, this one's a four for me. Fantastic. Did I say that Murder Rock was two? Murder Rock's a two. And so my next film I'm talking about came out in 1987. And I guess there's two on this that I have seen before, because I have seen Enigma before. Enigma with an A at the beginning. A-E-N-I-G-M-A, right? Sometimes spelt with that A-E combo, if you can get that on your keyboard. That's how Letterboxd does it. But, so Enigma is, yeah, so this is like Fulci taking Carrie and mashing it up with Patrick and then throwing his own spin on nightmare logic into it. Having rewatched this movie, I really do kind of love it. And I'll tell you why. It feels like, even though it's, I would say it's more of an homage to those films I did mention, or a ripoff. I mean, let's just say, you know, Italian movies are known for their ripping off. But here, I'll tell you what it's about. So basically, it's very typical. I mean, it's very similar actually to what did Dwayne and I cover this Christmas. To All a Good Night, is that what it's called? David Hess's film. Takes place at a girls' school. At the very beginning, the school maid's daughter gets tuition because her mom works there. So she's a little different. And this film begins with a cruel prank gone wrong, resulting in the death or serious injury of somebody at the beginning of a horror film, right? Trope alert, but still. So she is put into a coma. Meanwhile, very shortly after, a new girl arrives at the school. And oh, I guess this was another one that was filmed in Louisiana. What I didn't mention about One on Top of the Other or Perversion Story is that that film's shot in San Francisco, which I never thought that Fulci got west of Louisiana, honestly. I know he filmed in Louisiana. I think he did some in either Maine or Massachusetts, and then obviously a couple of movies in New York. I never knew he got to San Francisco, even though I'd seen that film before. It never really, when I saw that movie, I didn't know who Lucio Fulci was. So yeah, that one doesn't really count. But speaking of who Lucio Fulci is, Enigma really gets to the heart of a Fulci film. It's got a very typical Italian film setup, right? This is a girls' school. Girls seemingly fool around with the gym teacher. Which I guess is pretty typical for an Italian film. So he's a creep, and he's actually part of the prank. The prank gone wrong is that he was pretending to be into that girl to embarrass her. Right? Again, nothing original happening here. But yeah, of course, when the Italian's at it, he's the teacher. He's not just like the handsome guy in school. Christ's sake. Anyway, so the new girl shows up, and then all hell starts breaking loose when the I can't remember the name of the character, but the girl in the coma begins to start possessing the new girl, and through the new girl, getting revenge on those who put her in the coma. Right. Okay. It's not breaking any barriers, but there are real, real elements of nightmare shit. Like, it's silly, but a girl dies because there's a bunch of snails on her. But it's like that sequence is hard to take because it's so long and drawn out. And it's one of the real places in this movie where long drawn out actually works for it. However, I would say if you shave 10 minutes off of this movie, that would put it in, you know, that would make it a contender. And by that, I mean a contender for, you know, one of the best Fulci movies. It's just a little too long and drawn out, you know? Yeah, I would say it's poorly acted, but visually it's, you know, it's peak Fulci. So, and I think sometimes that just matters more in Italian cinema. So that's the fourth one out of the way. That's Enigma from 87. And then we jump to Demonia. Which, okay, I gotta look this up. Is this his last? No, I think he's got one movie after this. I don't know why I searched for Demonia and not Lucio Fulci, because that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for Lucio Fulci. I mean, I could have these things up. So he died back in 96. Oh! Door into Silence is his final movie. So after Demonia, also came out in 1990. Man, three movies came out in 1990 from Fulci. A Cat in the Brain, previously discussed on Dread Media. Demonia and a Hansel and Gretel TV movie. And then two movies in Voices, in 1991, Voices from Beyond. Which is also, I've seen, not discussed on Dread Media, though. And also Door into Silence, which I have discussed on Dread Media from 1991. And that's it. So three films after this one. My problem with this one is it just takes a great premise and, I don't know, just doesn't follow through on it. I've said that about a couple films, but this one was the most disappointing because the premise and the setup and the ideas in play, you know, had this been, you know, really, you know, better done, had this had a more established story, had it had a little more time to capitalize on some imagery and create some actually more nightmarish imagery, it really could have been something. You know, it really could have been like the Gates of Hell trilogy. And look, like, I don't even like The House by the Cemetery. I mean, I like it, but I mean, I like it about as much as I like Enigma. It's a 3 out of 5. But I mean, the other films in that, they're mind blowers to me. And I like this premise, this sort of archaeologist. It's Sicily, right? So Brett Halsey plays a Canadian archaeologist. Like, after the intro, that like jumps to Toronto, 1990. It's like, whoa, when did you ever see that back in that day? I guess in Italian films you did. But a Canadian archaeologist takes his team to Sicily to look into the ancient Greek influence in Sicily. Are met with very cold shoulders from the natives, right? Pretty typical. But it's not because of the reason, you know, they're like, hey, we're not interested in what happened here a couple hundred years ago. We're interested in what happened here, you know, thousands of years ago. So, you know, like, don't worry about it. And, and they do worry about it because, in the 1500s, this is where a cult of nuns were crucified and murdered. And the archaeological team, you know, accidentally uncovers this ancient evil. It's a great setup. It's a great premise. It's just, unfortunately, it's pretty poorly done. Some of the imagery is provocative, like the whole crucifixion stuff. You know, you're crucifying nuns, whether they're, you know, demon-possessed or not. But, you know, it loses its power when you show it repeatedly, right? So that's just sort of my problem with it. Although I gotta say, there is a scene of a guy being split in half in this movie. And it's fun. It looks terrible in one part, but when it's actually happening, it looks pretty good. That said, this one's a bit of a miss. It's a 2.5 out of 5 for me. It's more because I was disappointed by it. You know, just because it was, you know, it felt more gothic, more classic. You know, it's not set. And yeah, I don't know, maybe not gothic is the word, because like even these movies set at girl schools. So many of these movies set at girl schools. We get it. You know, send me on an archaeological dig. This could have been a really great folk horror film. Instead, it was, you know, kind of a fart in the wind. Wanted it to be a much better movie. Still, provided the imagery that gave me a t-shirt with a nun puking on it. So there's that. All right. So that's Demonia. that's our top five this time. And man, you know what? I need to get back to listening to more new music. I've been listening to pretty much Pig Destroyer, since Blake Harrison passed away. But I need to start listening to some new shit. I'll end this with a new song, but I keep also going back, you know, if I'm not listening to Pig Destroyer, I keep going back to Endrain's, latest record, which I can't remember the exact title of. The Way of All Flesh is Decay. That's why I couldn't remember it. It's that long. So this is Endrain from The Way of All Flesh is Decay and their song, When Death Comes Crawling. And then we'll come back and say goodbye. And that is us, my friends. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. This week's sort of impromptu six Fulci films plus a seventh film about Fulci. I've done a lot of work to watch those movies. Usually I usually watch no more than two movies for a week's episode. So this is an outlier. But anyway, if you enjoyed it, you can go to patreon.com/dreadmedia. Support the show for as little as a dollar a month. Send me an email. Even if you didn't enjoy it, you could send me an email. Send me what you think. Send me some questions. I don't know. Send me some feedback. I don't care. I'm on the Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Blue Sky. All is Dread Media. I'm on Facebook. There's a Facebook group. Yeah. Oh, DJ's Domicile of Dread.blogspot.com is where you can get, you can find out, everything that Tom's doing. I've recently, guest starred as an invisible werewolf, an invisible Canadian werewolf, in his recent production. So go check it out. And also like the Two True Freaks Network. That's very hard for me to say. Where all Tom's, podcast stuff happens, other than here. So there you go. Yeah, so I mentioned that I was gonna end on a song by a new band. In fact, a band inspired by the musicians that performed the scores for the films that we talked about today and for Italian cinema in general. I'm talking about the band that named itself after, well, okay. Their name's Zombie. Z-O-M-B-I. No E on the end. That is Dawn of the Dead. That is Dawn of the Dead's Italian title, Zombie. Zombie 2 was Fulci's sequel. Unofficial. Zombie 2 was released in America as Zombie with an E on the end, right? Okay. Anyway, these guys named themselves after after Dawn of the Dead's Italian title. They include Steve Moore on bass guitar, guitar, synthesizer, and then drummer. You know, I mean, I'm so shocked that these guys are so prolific. They keep releasing records. Steve Moore seemingly does like two movie scores a year. Busy motherfucker. And then, you know, there was I guess there was an EP 2 years ago from them, I think. Is that right? Yeah. But, yeah, anyway, Zombie Rules. This is, and you know, this is so good. The live drums in the studio make these synth wave songs pop. You know, they pop right off the track and just like, they feel real. They feel real. And that's what real drums does. So I appreciate Zombie for that. I appreciate them for a lot more. But anyway, here is Bodies in the Flotsam by Zombie. You guys take care of yourselves. Take care of others. This episode's been long enough already. I'm out of here. Goodbye now.